something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
And welcome back to hour two of our Wednesday night get-together. It is Nicole Sandler here on Air America Radio, and I am so thrilled. I'm broadcasting live from New York for the rest of the week, and what a great honor it is to welcome Michael McKean into
Nonsense.
The studio.
Nonsense. Honor is something else altogether.
It is an honor, and, you know, it's been a long time.
Yeah, well, we go back a long
way. We go back a long way. Now, yeah. I started telling the story the other night because I mentioned after I heard from you that you were going to come in the studio. You hold the distinct honor, another honor, mm-hmm. of being the only person to ever get me to curse on the radio.
You said a bad word.
I said a four-letter word.
You said the S word.
The S, as my daughter would say, the SH word. Right? She's
you know,
10.
We just keep spelling and we go ahead and say it.
Right. Well, Herb thought I said the F word because
no.
I said a four-letter word.
No.
But you got to remember, this was
92 or 93.
Exactly. Now, I was producing a big morning show in Los Angeles, the Mark and Brian Show.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, Howard Stern had just come into the market. And what Howard Stern would do when he'd enter a new radio market was scope out and attack the number one show
right.
in the market. Now, Mark and Brian at the time had this TV show on NBC. This will tell you exactly when it was because it was the year that Seinfeld started.
Well, that's... Seinfeld started in
91. So that's when it was because they both premiered that year. Seinfeld went on. Their show died, but The Adventures of Mark and Brian.
Right.
You were doing Spinal Tap.
Right.
David St. Hubbins, was your character.
We were doing our second album.
Right.
We were gearing up.
And so Mark and Brian were on vacation and I was hosting a best of. I'd play bits and, you know, and so you called the hotline. In character as David St. Hubbins.
Right.
And you're just talking to me. And I said, this is just too funny. I need to put you on the air. So I put you live on the air. And because it was a best of show, I didn't have the delay on.
Right.
So you're talking and you're cracking me up. And you said, hey, I've got, in your David St. Hubbins voice, I've got a great idea for an adventure for Mark and Brian.
Yeah.
And I said, really? What is that? And you said, they should go on the Howard Stern show. Now, we did not mention his name. We ignored him. We didn't listen to him.
And that was why I'd said it.
Right. And I just went.
I threw a firecracker under your car.
You
That's
certainly
all I did.
And I said, okay, thank you very much. Bye. And I hit the button for the commercial and I took off my headphones and I went, shh, the word I can't say on the radio.
Yeah.
And then I see like the switchboarders, we had a whole slew of people answering phones like, your microphone is on! I'm like, oh my God.
Memories are made of this.
They are, but it was.
I would hate to think that's the only memory that you associate with me.
Oh no, I've got wonderful memories of you. But that's, you know, that's something that is unique to Michael McKean, and that's our thing.
Well, thank you.
Thing.
Thank you. I'm glad I upset you in some way.
Oh, you didn't. And,
yes.
And I gotta say, my boss, who knew me very well, the big general manager, he said, at least you didn't say the F word.
Right.
So it was.
Or at least
good.
You didn't say Howard Stern again. That would have been even worse.
Right. Yeah. According to Mark and Brian, it would have been. But now you've come a long way since then. Now
I've been busy.
You have been busy.
Have been.
Well, right now, let's say we're in New York and you are.
Let's say that because it's true.
Right. And you're bearded.
I am way bearded. I grew it for this radio show.
Did you?
Yes. That's the kind of method actor I am.
I see. And so it must be a lot of testosterone growing.
Yes.
It must have grown very
I can
quickly.
Turn that stuff on or off.
I would guess it's for your role on Broadway in Superior Donuts.
That's correct.
You're playing a character named Arthur.
Take a stab at it.
Shubershevsky.
Very good.
Thank
oh, you
very
got
much.
The, you got the key there, don't you?
I have the pronunciation.
Yeah.
It's written phonetically.
No, I can't
for
spell
me.
It. No, it's Arthur Shubershevsky, yes.
He okay.
A crappy little donut store in Uptown Chicago. People in Chicago know where Uptown is.
Uh-huh.
And it's been in the family for 60 years, and as long as he's been on the earth. And, you know, it's kind of about a guy who tries to pull the world in over his head and hide. And there are forces that don't let that happen. And it's a wonderful play by Tracy Letts, who wrote August Osage County, won the Pulitzer and the Tony for Best Play 2 years ago. Wonderful writer and great American. Go ahead and say it.
Okay.
And, yeah, and it's a wonderful play. And it's at the Music Box Theater for another month or so. And get out there if you can.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So it's a dark comedy? What is?
I'd say so. Yeah, I'd say so. I'd say it's a very funny comedy, but there's a lot of stuff in it that isn't the stuff of comedy.
Mm.
And some of it stings, and some of it's, you know, kind of, it's a little flinchy at spots.
Okay.
It's,
well, that's
it's
life.
An E-ticket.
Right.
But it's also a very funny play. And, hey, it's a really lovely play about, you know, I've always thought that the more specific a work is, the more universal it becomes. So this is a play that's specifically about uptown Chicago in this year. But it's so beautifully done that it's about, you know, it's about all people everywhere. It's about, you know, getting along with yourself first, and
mm-hmm.
then learning how to be with other people. It's, you know, and like I say, some yaks, some laughs.
Cool. Well, that,
yeah.
and that is life. I mean,
that's right.
What it is.
Yeah.
Now, so what is the difference doing a stage show, a Broadway show,
yeah.
where you are doing the lines written for you every night, as opposed to you just came off of another tour, the Spinal Tap,
right.
Unwigged and Unplugged.
Yeah, that's right.
Which I got to see, but it was great. I mean,
oh,
it was
cool.
So cool seeing you guys in.
You saw us in Miami.
I saw you in Miami.
We had a good dancer in Miami. We, you know, we did Big Bottom with
right?
only one bass because we had gotten up to, I think, 19 basses, at, Live Earth.
Okay.
2 years ago.
Yes.
Got 19 basses,
mm-hmm.
including the guy from, Metallica.
Yes.
Who is like having 19 basses anyway. So it was like huge. And so we couldn't go any further in there because it was just us three guys. So Harry played bass. Harry alone played bass solo. And Chris and I we did a kind of cocktail
well,
version.
Derek Smalls is the ultimate bass player.
Yes, brilliant bass player, and as is Harry Shearer.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a girl dancing. We had mm-hmm. a girl do an interpretive dance to Big Bottom. So we had a different girl every trip. And my wife joined the tour after the first few gigs because she was busy doing something else. Then she went on the roads with us and she sang with us and stuff. My wife is an actress and a singer,
mm-hmm.
and so we would audition. We would, you know, somebody would find a girl to do the dance, and we would not audition. We'd just kind of do a little sound check, run it, and Annette would sit in the front row and give us, you know, the nod or the thumbs up. And this was one of the ones who got. Most of them were really, really cool, really good. And this one, she was actually related to some famous ballet dancer.
Really?
Yeah. So she was like, you know.
So how did you find that? You found somebody different in each city?
Yeah. You know, usually we had to clarify. Usually when you ask your tour manager to find you a girl, it's you don't get a dancer.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, one of our advanced guys would say, you know, he'd call ahead to find out if there's a dance studio or someone who's a teacher or even a school, you know, the youngest dancer we had was, I think, 17, and she was
wow.
really, really great. Yeah, you can actually buy the DVD of our last show, which was in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. It's called Unwigged and Unplugged. Yeah, Unwigged and Unplugged. And it's available on DVD. I can't tell you exactly where, but.
Everywhere.
Yeah. You can go. You can try everywhere.
Amazon?
Yeah.
I mean.
Oh, everywhere. way Amazon.
Right.
Yeah, that's the way to go.
Sure.
Yeah, that's the smart way to go. So anyway, it's, we had a really, really good one there too. The only one we really washed out on was Nashville. This girl who showed up and she had a lot of tats and she was kind of more of a burlesque kind of gal. So she didn't really know what, the idea was, could you do an interpretive dance, kind of a modern dance?
Mm-hmm.
So most people know that means like Fosse and kind of pre-Fosse and prehensile Fosse and all those gradations. You know, but, you know, this girl didn't have any of that. She just looked around for a pole, you
oh.
know, and there was mm. none. So it was like, so she just kind of stood there and wavered back and forth. She looked like she was about to try that test where the cop makes you, you know, walk the white line,
mm.
you know, and she wasn't going to do well. So that was the only one that Annette really vetoed.
I see.
Yeah.
Now, so your wife, Annette, came out on the road. I know Judith
yeah.
Owen, which is Harry's wife,
Judith
came
did,
out sometimes.
Well, she did the last two. She did Chicago. I think New York, Chicago. No, she did New York. Chicago, Milwaukee, and Los Angeles as well. Yeah.
And what about Jamie Lee Curtis? Did she ever?
Well, she doesn't. She doesn't sing.
No.
Exactly.
Okay.
No, she'll be the first to admit it.
Okay. and but, she is married to Christopher.
She is married to Christopher Guest. But that's not how you get these gigs. You know, you
got
to be good too.
And that's a
great singer.
Okay.
And
All right.
And Judith is a phenomenal.
Yes, she
singer.
Is.
Yeah, we had a good time on the road. We really did.
I bet.
We didn't. We thought. Miami, we thought that Florida would be a complete disaster.
Well, it is.
We thought, well, that's, you know. But we thought, we're playing St. Petersburg? I'm not even sure where that is. We're playing what? Jacksonville? There's a Jacksonville in Florida?
Mm.
And we got there, and it was really cool.
Really?
It was really fun. Yeah, the audiences were great. We played a beautiful old place in Jacksonville, a really older theater.
I've never been to Jacksonville.
No. Well, it's Jacksonville. Yeah. But and Miami was actually fun. We had fun at the gig. We walked around that part of town.
South Beach. Well,
it was not much.
No,
not much.
But
going
the theater
on. Had a good dinner.
The Jackie Gleason Theater, which, and this just tells you about Florida. It's the Jackie Gleason Theater.
I know.
And they call it the Fillmore. And they put up these two little psychedelic light show things.
Yeah.
So they can call it the film, or why not just play up the fact that it's this beautiful Art Deco theater, and it's the Jackie Gleason Theater.
Yeah. Well, don't ask me.
It's
not, that end of the business is so cracked to me. You know, we played some gigs that we didn't think were going to be fun, and they were great. Houston was amazing. Dallas was weird because it was kind of way out in the sticks, and it was in a big, big shed that they kind of cut down for us because we didn't draw more than 3,500.
Mm-hmm.
So, we played to more modest audiences, but they were still cool. They were still really good because the audiences were great.
Great.
A couple of towns I could mention and I won't.
Okay. Michael McKean is with us. If you want to call in, we're just sitting here.
We're just chilling. I gotta plug my Grammy nomination.
Well, we're gonna do that when we come back because I'm late. We gotta take a break. The number is 866-303-2270. Nicole Sandler and Michael McKean here in the studio. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler.
Nicole Sandler.
Give us a call at 866-303-2270.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
All right, we are back. Michael McKean is with us in the studio, and you mentioned something right before the break. You were nominated for a Grammy.
Yes, I just found out about an hour and a half ago, that the Spinal Tap's album, Back from the Dead, was nominated for two Grammys, for comedy album and for packaging.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, we worked really hard on the package. And I got to say that sharing in this nomination is the young man who actually thought of the gag for the cover of the album. And it's Christopher Guest's son, who's a very cool young man of 13.
Oh, how great.
Yeah. And he came up with the idea and we all went, right.
And what is it? I haven't seen
it. Well, you gotta get it.
This is
radio.
Well, okay, but you know what? You have a history of creative packaging, so to speak, because I have at home.
Yeah.
That I've never opened it. Remember when they first changed over from albums to CDs and all the record stores still had the fixtures from the thing, so they had to have the long boxes.
Yes.
And you put out one in an extra long box.
That's right.
And I still have the extra long box that
great.
All three of you signed for me.
Oh, good.
So I've never opened it. I've got the extra long box that's signed, and it's one of my prized possessions.
Yeah, we were always brainstorming. I was trying to figure out ways to make us less commercial.
So that was fun. So it was great. Two Grammy nominations.
Yeah, that's kind of neat. Yeah.
What I started to get to when I was talking about you're on Broadway and you're following a script, obviously, because with this, you've got to read the words as written, but you've done a lot of the work with Spinal Tap, I would think, and the other things that you do with Christopher Guest, Best in Show, and those movies have been a lot, they're very much improvisational.
They're entirely improvised.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't even rehearse. We talk, about lives that were, you know, the characters are living. You know, mm-hmm. and of course, you know, Christopher and Eugene always kind of wrote with actors in mind. They knew who they were writing for. They knew that we'd be available. I just saw Fred Willard tonight. He came to
really?
The show tonight.
Oh,
yes, Fred
wow.
and his fabulous wife, Mary, just, you know, I've known Fred forever. And I haven't even known him as long as a lot of people have known him.
Mm-hmm.
So. But anyway, it was nice to see him tonight, just parenthetically. But anyway, you know, Chris and Eugene always know who they're writing for. So then we get on the set and we kind of start peddling, you know, and it's a party. It's fun.
Well, all those movies, I mean, at any time there was one on the horizon, it was like, you know, that it's going to be hysterically funny. You know, it's going to be really offbeat and it's going to be a real treat.
Well,
do you have a favorite of those?
Well, I got to say A Mighty Wind.
Mm.
Because we, you know, we were so involved with the music and we wrote, you know, I wrote on about 10 of the songs on the soundtrack. My wife and I wrote 3. I wrote several with Chris, several with Eugene, several with CJ Vanston, who is our, you know, guiding light guy,
mm-hmm.
who's a great producer, and he also produced this album. He's up for this Grammy as well. So, you know, it's a great bunch of people. It really is. And they're all a little bit, well, they're, I don't know how to say it. They can be kind of nasty, but in a really, really nice way.
Uh-huh.
Because they're so pleasant. They're all such pleasant people, but they can, you know, kind of, they can get you. They're great, you know.
Well, that's humor too.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah, they're kind of fearless.
Right, and A Mighty Wind was wonderful. I mean, the Folksmen were born of that, and it's...
No, the Folksmen actually came before.
Oh, did they?
The Folksmen go back to 1984.
Yeah.
When I hosted Saturday Night Live,
mm-hmm.
The three of us, after the movie Spinal Tap, the three of us were offered Saturday Night Live. Chris and Harry did the gig. I was involved with other stuff back in L.A., and I just had a, you know, my wife's just having a second... My first wife was having our second child.
Uh-huh.
You know, keep track of these. You know, so I didn't go, but I did host that one time and then we wanted to do something that wasn't Spinal Tap. So we created this band.
All right. And we'll pick up after the break because we're up against the clock. Michael McKean is with us. We're talking about the Folksmen and Spinal Tap and lots more. We'll be right back.
I'm nobody's clown. I'm treating you cool.
Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
Ah, yes. This one goes to 11. Michael McKean is with me here in the studio. Yes.
Coming at you in the night, the mellow sounds of Spinal Tap. This is Miles from Nowhere. It's my midnight voice.
It's good. You could do
That's
the late night disc jockey
thing.
That's a
great gig, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't sleep anyway. So.
Before the break, we were talking about the Folksmen and how mm-hmm. they came about, and I mistakenly thought that they were born in A Mighty Wind, but you were saying,
yeah.
So after Spinal Tap, and you guys were offered to come on Saturday Night Live, and so it was on Saturday Night Live, the Folksmen?
Yeah, they were regulars on the show. I hosted, and the three of us did this. Actually, it came about because we had had our picture taken for Rolling Stone magazine as the band and as ourselves,
uh-huh.
just kind of a two-page thing. And so when we were ourselves, we looked at it, and I said, man, we look like a washed-up folk band without the...
Ah. You know.
So we all went, okay. So we filed that away, and then we did this piece for SNL, and we, you know, wrote a bunch of songs and everything, and some of them became... You know, the songs that we still do is the Folksmen.
Right. And when you did the Unwigged and Unplugged tour,
yeah.
You did both.
Tap songs, yeah, and Mighty Wind songs, and including songs that the Folksmen didn't do, that, you know, the other bands. We commandeered those. And also other pieces, you know, other things. A couple of songs from Waiting for Guffman.
Uh-huh.
Which was
another brilliant movie.
It's a wonderful movie, yes. Some songs that Chris and I wrote. It was a good outing.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we do Start Me Up, the Rolling Stones. That's always important.
Now, so do you like, do you prefer doing the improvisational stuff, or is it just something different? I mean, I'm sitting here looking at Wikipedia of all things, and yeah. looking at your body of work.
Does it have that I did the sound recording on the Erotic Adventures of Zorro.
No, but
because I didn't. But sometimes that credit got to, there's a guy who had a name like mine.
But
it
there's
up in my resume.
There's a really interesting entry in here that says that Harry Shearer was being interviewed on the Opie and Anthony radio show, and that Harry said that you were in the Left Bank, who
yeah.
did Walk Away, Renee.
Well, yeah, with an asterisk. It was after their first album came out. The band sort of split up, and they all had a big fight. But then their song started getting plays.
Uh-huh. Walk Away Renee was a great song.
Pretty Ballerina was a uh-huh. minor hit. But they weren't speaking to each other. So Mike Brown put together another version of the Left Bank. So that's what I was in.
And you were.
I rehearsed with them for about 3 months, and we got all fitted out with clothes and had our picture taken, and we had some gigs lined up, and then we released a single that I did not play on because they had studio guy. I was 19 years old. I wasn't a very good guitar player at the time. And so they got a studio guy to play on it, play the guitar on it. And it was a stinker, and it didn't go anywhere. And then Mike Brown had a big fight with his father, and the band broke up again. So we grabbed our instruments and uh-huh. our pretty clothes, and we got the hell out of there. And I went back to college. I went back to NYU. So that's the entire adventure. I never make it more than it was. That's exactly what it was.
The way it's written here, it's like, I didn't know if that was something he made up. You were in the Left Bank. You weren't in the Left Bank. Okay. But then, so how did you get, you went to NYU.
Yeah.
And then you wound up in the Credibility Gap?
Right. I went to Los Angeles in 1970. Mm-hmm. David Lander was my good friend that I met at the first school I went to at Carnegie Tech. And then, he said, come on out of here. It's sunny all the time, and it's great. And, girls are fabulous. And, okay, so I go out there, and so I become part of the Credibility Gap. I, started working a couple of times a week, and then gradually I just became a permanent member. By 72, we started, working live, and we made some albums, and, we were kind of a very funny, very unsuccessful act,
uh-huh.
And, we had a lot of fun. We opened for some odd acts. We opened for John Denver.
Wow.
We opened for Commando Cody. Nobody knows who Commando
Cody
is anymore.
Lost Planet Airman.
Really good kind of, Texas, sure. Texas boogie band.
Yeah.
Opened for, who was good? Oh, that guy. I can't think of his name. Anyway, it'll come to me. We mostly opened people, but we played, gigs in LA where we headlined and, had a kind of a following. And then 75, we started working on Laverne and Shirley, David and I. And Harry was actually writing on the show as well.
Wow.
And,
You were, of course, Lenny.
Yes, that's right.
And Lenny and the Squig Tones.
Yes.
That's
right.
Did that lead to the Spinal Tap or to?
No, well, everybody's experiences on the road led to the movie, really. Everyone had been on the road either as musicians or as part of a touring company of a show. Rob Reiner had never been in a band, but he had toured with some plays, and it's that same thing. It's that same, you can't win, this mm-hmm. kind of thing. Everything's falling apart, and everything that can fall apart will, which was kind of our watch cry. So,
I have a videotape, and I don't know where I got it from, but it was back in those days, the Mark and Brian days that we talked about before. That is outtakes from This Is Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
That is absolutely hysterical.
Well, you can find that stuff. The MGM release of a couple of years ago had a lot of that stuff on it. There's a Blu-ray out now. I don't know what's on that.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to sneak a lot of crap in there. But the outs, a lot of the stuff that was, there is a 3.5 hour version of the film,
right.
Which is way too long for that movie.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
But there's some funny stuff in there.
Well,
yeah.
And that, I mean, that will go down as one of the all-time great comedy rock and roll films.
Yeah. Think so. Yeah. We're proud of it.
As you should be.
Yeah.
I'm looking at your filmography.
Well, how long do I got here? Can I get 5 minutes? I just want to talk about one thing.
Please. Please, Jim.
Yeah. Well, this time of year, twice a year, actually, the Broadway community and off-Broadway raise money for an amazing charity called Broadway Cares Equity
yes.
Fights AIDS, which is, a charity that takes care of people who are living with HIV. But also it funds other organizations, the Al Hirschfeld Free Healthcare Clinic of the Actors Fund, Phyllis Newman Women's Healthcare Initiative.
Mm-hmm.
It's all under the same blanket collection that we do twice a year. And so I go out and I do this speech. I got the biggest mouth in the cast. So I go out and I make the speech. And the first, couple of weeks we did this, I did this joke about Fox News, okay? Here's the joke. It's not the greatest joke in the world, but it got a good laugh, you know, the theater crowd.
Right.
I said, Broadway Cares Equity Fights Age is a fabulous organization. In fact, it's such a wonderful organization, I don't know why Fox News hasn't compared them to Hitler. Now, it's a pretty good joke. Not a great joke.
It's always got a
great laugh every night. Every night. And then, you know, the cast would go around with buckets, you know, and you know, people would put money in the buckets and whatever. And, one of the guys in the cast said, you know, this guy really got pissed off about that. And I said, oh, well, it's breaking my heart, you know, whatever. And, you know, it's one out of that. And then I think the man's wife wrote me. Now, I'm going to read it to you. I'm not going to tell you who it's. She didn't even sign her name because people who defend bullies are what? Cowards. That's correct. I was in the audience Thursday, November 5th. Your comment about Fox News was totally uncalled for and out of line. We have always given to Broadway Cares. November 5th, 2009, we did not. Nor did other people walking out when I did. Of course, a lot of people don't, but you know.
Right.
They also commented to the actor holding the can for the donation. So that's what made me think it was Rob Mafia, who's one of the actors in the play. He said it was the one who said, I have now told everyone not to see the show. So I guess she means everyone on earth.
Because she doesn't
specify.
Right.
But anyway, that's from, and you can always tell this is a classy woman because she has the number of her street there spelled out.
Yes.
Word 30.
Yeah, it looks like a wedding invitation, RSVP.
It does,
envelope.
Yes. No bumps, though. And of course, RDD is her. But no, you know, no signature.
No signature.
But anyway, I just wanted to share that with you.
Well, that makes me want to contribute even more. So
yes.
Broadway Cares, Equity Fights AIDS.
Right.
And this just.
If you go to see a Broadway play and, in the next week and they ask for donations, please do.
Herb is holding up some money to give you to take and put in the thing tomorrow night. But they only do it this time of year?
No, twice a year.
In
the spring.
I see.
Yeah.
You know, and this is a good time to mention it because yesterday was World AIDS Day.
That's correct.
So
that's very right.
There you go.
Right.
You know, while we're, it's not really a political thing, and this is not really the right segue into that. But as I was leaving the vigil today about the escalation for the war in Afghanistan,
right.
I thought I was walking back to the apartment where I'm staying in Chelsea, and I wound up walking north instead of south. Yes, of course. And I came across another protest and a bigger protest. And there were people protesting the New York State Senate's today voting down marriage equality.
Yes.
You mentioned that you thought we were evolving. I think this was
we're trying to evolve.
We're trying to evolve.
I don't think we're going to make it because I think that there's a lot of opposition to evolution, not just as a theory, but as an activity. I really think that we're supposed to not be making war anymore.
Yes.
Maybe not by this year, maybe not next year, but I think that that's eventually the goal, you know. I just think if civilization means anything, it should be a process that gets better. And, you know, I sometimes despair.
I do too. I mean, I was wondering about this the other night and I wrote on my blog. It's like, it seems like such a prehistoric is the wrong word to use. Just such an old kind of way to deal with problems.
Yeah.
I mean, so the governments of two countries have a dispute.
Right.
So they take their lowliest, poorest citizens and make them do a fight to the death.
Yeah.
Why not just go into their prisons, take the worst murderer in there from each country, put them in a cage match to the death. Then only one person dies. It's a horrible murderer anyway. And it's over and done with. I mean, I don't understand the whole killing.
When I was a kid, you know, like 8 or 9 years old, me and my buddies would watch war movies, you know, and they were exciting and they were fun and it was cool and guys died and, you know, shooting guns looked like a lot of fun and everything. But even then I started thinking, well, these two people have never met and this guy kills this guy and one of them's a hero and what, you know, and it was like, here's this guy named Joe and he kills this guy named Klaus and they've never met each other. And it didn't hold water for me. It didn't, didn't seem like logical behavior to me.
Right.
But, you know, I think that's who I am, you know.
Well, and so in the whole way to, if, as a way to resolve conflict doesn't make sense.
No.
Because it's more conflict.
No, but you know what? You go to war with the war you have. You can't go to war with peace. Remember that.
Well, yeah, but we just had a president last night tell us, well, we're going to escalate the war.
Right.
In order to draw down the war.
Yeah.
We're going to escalate to pull back. Again, nothing about it makes sense.
No. No,
and the financial situation we're in doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I think we should all just take a breather.
Okay.
All right.
So we'll do that. We'll take a breather, come back to wrap things up with Michael McKeon. Don't go away.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio. Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
It is so much fun to have you here. Michael McKeon is with us, and to listen to your music. Can you listen to Spinal Tap songs?
Sure. We just spent the whole year doing
it.
So,
of course.
So it's not like play anymore.
Right.
But we re-recorded all the classics for, you know, because we kind of know how to make it sound better now.
Yes.
And with some new stuff. And there's also, in this package, there's also a DVD of us discussing all of the songs. And it's some of it gets pretty amusing.
And you're nominated for a Grammy for
it. Yeah, we got nominated for a Grammy.
That only helps.
Yeah, we're up against Stephen Colbert. So I think we're in trouble. But you know what? The nominee, it's an honor. Well, it's an honor just to win, as Gary Shandling likes to point out. But it's nice.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And just to say again, Michael McKeon starring in Superior Donuts on Broadway. The thrill of the theater and going out there every night still?
It's the best thing.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean, I started acting on the stage in high school when I was, you know, 14, 15, and got really, really serious right away and read every play I could get my hands on and tried to talk the drama teacher into trying this and doing this. And so I was like this really kind of maniacal guy. And then, you know, I wound up in my early 20s going out to L.A. and having the career that I've had, which has been a lot of fun. And, you know, meet the best people. I work with the same people all the time, and they're my best friends. And, you know, it's like really kind of an Edenic thing. And I come back here, I go, well, this is what I wanted to do in the first place. This is such an amazing job to really to tell people the whole story at once, just give it to them. And you know, they do with it what they will. The audiences have been so phenomenal for this play. They love this play so much, and we're just really proud to make them to put them through it. You know, to give them, because I think first of all, I think you make people healthier when you make them laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's actually, I think that's a fact that
well,
you actually
do. Well, and we need
that.
Laughter right
sure,
now.
Yeah.
As we were just talking during the break. I mean, you can give up or you can go on and laughter is really,
it's good,
it's
for
a good
you.
Thing. Yeah.
But it's also, it's a very thoughtful play about people and about politics and kind of in, you know, not very, very specific, but it's about being the, you know, being the purveyor of your own life. You know, not to make it sound too hoity-toity, because it's not. It's a very down-and-dirty, funny play.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I dig doing it every night. I dig. The great thing about this job is if you mess something up, you come back the next night, and you can mess it up an entirely different way.
Right.
Yeah.
So performance is different each night, depending on how you're feeling?
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I think people in the audience wouldn't notice.
Right.
But we know. You know, sometimes you'll drop a line or drop a reference, you know, that you might need later, and you fret about it for about a half a second because you have to go on and do the rest, you know. And it's just an amazing job. And I'm working with these people from Chicago. We did the play in Chicago in 2008 at Steppenwolf, amazing theater company, and about five ensemble members, but also other people from all around Chicago area. Chicago has great actors because it's a great, great theater town. And so, you know, here's, you know, I'm working with these kind of fabulous, fabulous actors. And the entire company made the trip. They're all here in New York. Very unusual, but very smart. And it's a wonderful show.
So you mentioned it's going to run for about another month or so.
About another month, yeah, yeah. We're ducking out beginning of January.
And then what? Then do you know what you're going to do next?
Not actually, no. I'm going to be in town for a little longer because we're kind of setting up shop here, but be going back to L.A. and hanging out, seeing my dog, you know. And I miss my dog.
I bet.
You know, I miss my kids, too, but at least I talk to them on the phone.
you know? can't talk to the dogs on the phone. So much. No.
You know, but we have this kind of crazy house in Los Angeles that we do love. And, you know, when we first got married, we needed pretty much room for six because we had two kids. She had two girls. I had two boys. And it gave us a kind of that Brady Bunch vibe.
Uh-huh. You know,
they don't show the violence so much in Brady Bunch. But
No, not at all. Right.
But now they're all great. They love each other very much. And it's a great family.
So
they're all over the place. Two of the kids are up in Oregon, and one lives over in Silver Lake, and one is still in the house. The baby's still in the house. She just turned 21.
Well, Michael McKeon, this is such a pleasure. It's been too long. So it's nice to catch up
Same
and
here.
To see you. And your body of work is phenomenal, like I said, just looking at the list.
Seen the Wikipedia stuff. That's kind of scary.
No, I mean...
what do the red ones mean?
I have no idea.
No, just what we
Masters of Horror and Suspense.
That was a pilot I did.
Kill the Man. Never
very
Again.
Very low budget.
Flapper, She's French.
Slapper, She's French. Yes.
Starring myself as Pancho Villa.
Also starring Pancho Villa. Those
are the ones that are in red. I don't know why. But
that means just that there's no other, you can't.
1941, Used Cars, Young Doctors in Love. This is Spinal Tap.
I know all of
Clue.
These, Nicole. I know all of these.
But I'm reading Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Clue, and this time
Clue
of
is,
year.
Clue is one that people of a certain age, people who were little when Clue came out. You know, it's probably the first time they heard a person say, I'm a homosexual. In a movie.
Uh-huh.
That's my character is pretending to be.
Mr. Green.
Mr. Green. Yeah.
Did it in the parlor with a rope.
I never did it anywhere. In any of the endings, I was not responsible.
Michael McKeon. See him on Broadway for another month in Superior Donuts and on a movie from your local video store.
Yeah, and you can also get Unwigged and Unplugged DVD, which is Christopher Guest, Harry Shearer, and myself. And Annette O'Toole. And Judith Owen.
Michael McKeon, thank you so much.